versus First Global Inc., cause number 18411-CV, and with that, we're ready to proceed. Morning, Ms. Andrews.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. The court lacks jurisdiction over First Global's suit because First Global did not accompany its tax protest, I'm sorry, its payment with a protest letter, and it did not file this suit within 90 days of submitting that payment. The exception that First Global seeks to invoke applies only to taxpayers who are not required to pay electronically, which First Global is. First Global's attempts...
Hey, help me understand. So is this not required to pay by EFT? Is that a distinction based upon your tax payments or based upon the protest payments? There seems to be some confusion there.
In general, it's based upon the amount that you paid in the prior year. So the statute says that the exception applies to taxpayers who are not required by comptroller rule to pay via EFT. Comptroller rule 3.9 controls who has to pay via EFT. 3.9B talks in general about taxpayers who have to pay via EFT, and that depends on how much they paid in the prior year. So any taxpayer who paid more than $10,000 and fewer than $100,000 in the prior year does have to pay via EFT. Now, tax protest payments are accepted from the EFT requirement. That doesn't necessarily make them a taxpayer who does not have to pay via EFT. 3.9I says tax protest payments do not have to be made via EFT. However, they have to be accompanied by a protest letter. The 3.9I says that no fewer than six times, that the protest letter must accompany the tax payment in order for it to count as a tax protest payment.
So we know that there is no letter that accompanied the payment, correct?
That's right.
The EFT. Was there any indication when the payment was made that it was under protest?
There was not, Your Honor. When the payment was made, First Global requested an extension of the time to file their report.
But there's no indication when they requested the extension it was for a purpose of protest or anything like that. It was just an extension?
That's correct. There was no indication. It was not until they filed their report 3 months later that they filed their protest letter. Even if they had given some indication, which they did not, but even if they had, the statute lays out specific ways that they have to give that notice. The statute says it has to be in writing, fully detailing the reason for the protest.
As far as knowing what type of extension they got, whether it was under C or E, does that turn upon whether they were required to file their tax payments by EFT? I mean, answers that question for us?
It does, Your Honor. 171202C requires the comptroller grant extensions to taxpayers who are not required to file electronically if they meet certain criteria. And then section 171202E requires the comptroller to grant extensions to taxpayers who are required to pay electronically. And
what's
the reference
that
in section 112052B, which is the exception to the requirement that the payment be accompanied with the letter, refers specifically to 171202C.
Amazingly, everyone in the room is still here. Nobody has run for the exit.
I apologize.
What is the purpose, the difference between, or what would be the reason for treating folks that fall under one type of reporting differently than the folks that fall under the other type of reporting?
It's not clear what the legislature's reasoning was for coming up with this policy, but it is clear that this is what they've done. There's really no reason to look at why the legislature did what it did when the language is perfectly clear. And to apply the exception to taxpayers who obtained an extension under a different section other than 171202C is not to look at the legislative intent at all. It would be to completely ignore the language that the legislature used and substitute different language. So we really don't even have to look at why the legislature did it. There are actually some reasons that kind of show why this whole suit, why these little jurisdictional problems are occurring. First Global has claimed that nobody could possibly comply with that because they don't know at the time they request an extension exactly why they're going to protest. And that goes to show why this really isn't supposed to be a protest suit. First Global could still request a refund and go through the administrative process and then file a refund suit. They didn't do that. They wanted to skip the administrative process because they have other periods that are still pending at the administrative level. So instead, they're trying to make this a protest suit and jump into court. But there are some taxpayers who could know at the time they file their extension request that they protest having to pay taxes at all. And those are generally the type of businesses that pay under $10,000. Those businesses may believe that they don't have to pay franchise taxes. And then someone at the comptroller's enforcement unit discovers them and tells them that they have to pay. And so they know at the time that they pay anything and that they request an extension, that they disagree that they're going to have to pay taxes at all. They could take advantage of the exception in 112052B. But for taxpayers like First Global who agree that they owe something, it's just a matter of how much. We're talking here about how they apportion their taxes. The question is, what portion of their gross receipts are attributable to business done in Texas compared with business done elsewhere? This is a fine, minute issue that the comptroller needs to look into, develop a position on. The First Global needed time to develop its position on it. This is not just a matter of a simple case where they know right off the bat they disagree that they owe taxes. We're talking about the numbers here. That's a function for the comptroller's auditors to do. That's something that the auditors figure out, and then once that's complete, then they have a decision or they have some demand to make a specific payment. And at that point, they can make their protest, setting out fully and in detail all the reasons that they disagree with the comptroller's position. But only once the comptroller has taken a position and they've fully developed their position.
Under your interpretation, aren't there some scenarios where the suit would have to be filed essentially on the same day the protest is filed?
No, Your Honor, the Section 112052 says that the suit has to be filed within 90 days of the date the protest payment is made. So if you're submitting your protest with the payment, you'll have 90 days, or it says before the 91st day. So you have 90 days to file the suit after you've made that payment. So Rule 3.9i does say that certain taxpayers don't have to, it says that tax protest payments do not have to be made electronically, but again, it still requires that tax protest letter be submitted with the payment, so it can't work to exempt First Global from the requirement that it submit the protest letter with the payment.
Would your position be any different here if First Global had not done an electronic transfer payment and paid by check or one of the other ways they could have paid in protest?
If they had paid in another way and accompanied it with the protest letter, which 3.9i sets out exactly how to go about doing that, you can pay it electronically, you can and send your letter by fax or within 24 hours hand delivery. There are various ways that they could have done that, and our position on this exact issue would be different, but that wouldn't resolve all of the jurisdictional issues. The fact that this case is essentially not ripe for review would still remain. The fact that the comptroller never declared an amount. A protest suit is when someone is demanded to pay a certain amount and they pay that amount, but they say, okay, but here's why I disagree. Nobody demanded First Global pay this amount. First Global voluntarily filed their tax return and said, but we disagree with what we're paying, and without ever giving the comptroller an opportunity to take any kind of position on it, we're now in court trying to get a judge to essentially step into the auditor's shoes and review First Global's records and determine how their receipts should be apportioned. So even if they had accompanied that payment, we would still have some issues. We wouldn't be talking about 112052B or
But isn't that kind of talking, I mean, it almost sounds the opposite of what you're arguing, which is they should have go ahead and given us the protest letter when they paid, and that would have in turn started the 90 days ticking, and so they would have had to sue within 90 days. But then now you're saying, well, they should have really waited for the comptroller to make a determination before they protested. So I don't understand how those two arguments can go together.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is there's a limited waiver of sovereign immunity to allow this suit. In order to comply with that waiver, they had to submit their protest letter with their payment. That's the clear language of the statute. Failure to do that bars jurisdiction. First Global's argument is we couldn't do that because we didn't know why we were protesting at the time. And that it's true that they couldn't have done that, but that's because this really could never have been filed as a protest suit. It just wasn't ready. But they did file it as a protest suit, and so then we look at the language of the statute waiving sovereign immunity, and we say, well, they didn't comply with this clear statutory requirement that the payment be accompanied with a letter, so sovereign immunity is not waived, and the suit is barred.
So what you're saying is that there are going to be necessarily some taxpayers who are not going to be able to take advantage of the pay and protest when they file.
That's right, Your Honor. Only taxpayers for whom the comptroller has never demanded they pay anything. In this case, the administrative proceeding is still ongoing with respect to earlier periods. The comptroller's hearings attorney has taken a position on how First Global should apportion its taxes, and First Global has taken another position. That will eventually go to a SOA judge who will adopt one of those two positions or maybe a third position, and then that SOA judge will issue a proposal for decision that the comptroller can then choose to accept, reject, or modify. At that point, the comptroller will have taken a position on how First Global is to apportion their taxes. So what First Global could have done while this was pending, it's true that they still owe taxes for ongoing periods while this administrative proceeding is pending before a final decision has been issued. What they could have done during that point is they could pay under their theory, and then for tax year 2017. They could pay under their own apportionment theory. And then once the comptroller issues a final decision, the comptroller may audit 2017 and say, okay, you owed this additional amount. And at that point, they can pay that amount under protest because there's an amount that's been demanded of them. They can pay that with a protest letter and say, we disagree, but you say we owe it. We're going to go into court and ask a judge to say if that's right. Or if they want to avoid any possibility of interest and penalties, they could pay under the comptroller's hearings attorney's theory, they could pay the most they may possibly owe and then request a refund. And there's a whole provision for how those refund suits work, and they're still within time to do that. It's a 4-year statute of limitations. They could request a refund, and then that will get rolled in with the administrative proceeding. They'll go through the same proceeding, they'll eventually get a final decision, and then if that decision is not to their liking, they can file a refund suit under 112.151.
So is it fair to say you're essentially arguing that they're not ripe for a protest suit?
That is certainly part of it, Your Honor. We've been sticking to the clear statutory language because it is an absolute bar. And it's a little more confusing to say it's not ripe because there's so much ongoing. But that is the fact here. They're trying to, this is a refund suit. They're trying to shove the square peg of a refund suit into the round hole of a protest suit, and it's just not working.
And do we have any case law or other statutory authority kind of for that distinction?
As far as protest versus refund suit, mm-hmm. No, Your Honor, there's nothing that's decided this exact issue. There are cases saying failure to accompany your payment with a letter is a jurisdictional bar. There have been, I believe, 3 cases out of this court, one out of the
3 bullet cases.
3 bullet cases, that's right, Your Honor. All of those cases did rule that it was jurisdictional.
Ms. Andrews, can I ask a question? So under your first scenario that they could have paid under their own theory, and then after an audit, if there was more that the comptroller asked, they could have paid that under protest. At that point, if they are found to owe more taxes, would they be liable for fees and penalties?
There may be some interest and penalties attached depending on when the dust settled, when that actually happened. It is likely that there would be interest at least. penalties are much more nebulous. It's hard to say, but it is very likely that there would be interest, and so that's why most taxpayers pay the most they might owe and request a refund. And these prepayment requirements have been upheld. Their failure to comply with the statutory prerequisites does make the court lose jurisdiction, so we ask that this court reverse and render.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, Ms. Leonard. Whenever you're ready.
May it please the court. Good morning. Again, my name is Lacey Leonard, and I'm here today on behalf of the Appalee First Global Inc., and we are asking the court to affirm the ruling of the trial court, denying the state's motion to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. This case presents an issue of first impression for the court. First Global has protested its 2017 annual Texas franchise tax report. There was no audit, and there was no assessment issued for the tax period. Instead, First Global invoked the exception set out in Texas Tax Code 112.052B, which permits a taxpayer to extend the deadline to file their annual report, and then subsequently, when they file that report, to attach the protest letter to the report at that time, and then file a lawsuit, a protest suit, seeking to protest and the return of the entire amount of tax claimed for that period. Importantly, the comptroller has agreed on pages 9 and 10 of their opening brief that if this exception applies to First Global, then the jurisdiction is proper here because we have complied with all of the steps set out in 112.052B. Thus, the issue for the court today is whether or not the exception in 112.052B applies to First Global. So, to put it succinctly, if the exception applies, jurisdiction lies.
When did First Global know it was going to protest? Did it know when it filed its when it made its payment, or sometime after, sometime before? Like, do we know when they decided to protest?
First Global knew at the time. It had a good idea because, just quick background, we do have 4 years of administrative claims pending. They've been pending since the first one since 2012, and we went through that process, and you may have seen in the record, we asked repeatedly for them to advance those claims out of their office to the State Office Administrative Hearings for a hearing so we could get a final ruling and go into district court the traditional way. But after years and years and years of sitting with them, and after them auditing us through that process and telling us very specifically their position on and the formula that we should use to apportion our taxes, which we disagreed with, they never would remand us over. And so we waited a few years thinking they might audit us for the intervening years that where we could pay under protest and get into district court, and it never happened. And then we turned to the tax code and the provisions in 112.051 and 112.052 that allow this.
So let me understand. So for those years, have y'all requested a refund, or where are we with those years?
They are sitting, not because we asked them to sit, but they are sitting. And yes, we requested refunds for all of those years.
When you say they're sitting, what do you mean?
They are within the jurisdiction of the tax division of the comptroller of the state of Texas, and they're not moving them forward.
Is there anywhere that says that a taxpayer is entitled to protest remedy versus refund remedy?
So yes, 112.051 and 112.052, when you read them together, though subchapter B of chapter 112 is where the protest provisions are set out. And we know that the legislature envisioned this and set out a process for the taxpayers to protest original annual reports versus an assessment because of the very fact that in 112.052B, we are talking about extensions. The only circumstances in which a taxpayer files an extension is prior to filing an original report. So the legislature didn't intend for us to protest our original report. They would not have set out a process for us to extend the deadline to file that report and then subsequently protest the report at the time it was filed. So very clearly, they intended for us to be allowed to protest original reports. The state's argument is that the amount claimed by the state means assessment, and that they need to, for every single year, issue an assessment, and that's the only way this would be right. We disagree with that. Whether or not we've been able to calculate the exact amount here is a question of fact, and they agreed on the record in the lower court that we would be entitled to discovery on that issue, and that's why that argument isn't properly before the court today, because they removed it from their original motion to dismiss.
On this issue of 171.202, the distinction between C and E, are you essentially arguing that because you don't have to pay your protest filing by EFT, that's why you're entitled to C?
That's correct.
Follow that?
That's correct.
Okay, well, given that 3.9 says that no protests have to be paid by EFT, then essentially, doesn't that mean all protests would be an extension under C, if not otherwise stated?
It does, absolutely.
And doesn't that then require us to ignore some language out of 112.052?
If you're referring to maybe subsection A, I would say yes in this situation, because B is an exception. It sets it out very clearly. It says, you know, this is an exception to the requirement in A that you attach the letter to the protest payment, because A is talking about when someone is protesting a tax assessment. B very clearly says this is an exception to that requirement. In this situation, when a taxpayer is protesting an original annual report, they are not required to attach the payment to the protest letter to the payment. And
it's impressive that both you and Ms. Andrews think that this is so clear. I'm not as smart as you all.
Well, would the legislature, because you have C and you have E, and so if the legislature, I'm going to ask you the opposite of the question that I asked Ms. Andrews, if the legislature meant for all taxpayers to be able to use this, then why put in that language in there at all?
Because under C, very clearly under the plain language of C, anytime anyone is making a protest payment, they are not required by rule to make that payment via EFT. What C actually says is a taxable entity who is not required by rule to make its tax payments in connection with the filing of a report under that section, which that section is referring to annual reports, they're granted an extension under that section. Tax payments is very broad, and they know that we can protest original annual reports.
So is there a distinction between tax payments and protest payments?
Not in the statute, and tax payments is broad. It could be your annual payment, an extension payment, a protest payment. I also think it's really important to understand that the extension process. Okay, when a taxpayer seeks an extension, they do two things. They submit the required form and they make a payment. And as long as they do those two things, as a matter of law, they are entitled to the extension. Those are the only two things they have to do. There is no comptroller action involved whatsoever, and no comptroller judgment is used in this process. When the taxpayer submits the form, they are, then just essentially ignored by the comptroller. It goes into their computer system, but they don't send a letter back to the taxpayer saying your extension was granted under C or E or any other section. That's why the comptroller, you'll note, has been unable to point to any evidence in the record to negate this jurisdictional fact regarding whether or not it was granted under C or E, because there is no order, there is no decree, there's no other document in the record that would indicate that it was granted under C or E.
Well, in that distinction, I mean, she argues that distinction is determined by the fact that they do or don't have to file by EFT.
Well, and I agree with her that if we were making an ordinary payment, we would have to submit our payment by EFT, but not when we're making a protest payment. Protest payments, very clearly under the rule, are not required to be made by EFT, nor can they be, because under Government Code 404.095, which was adopted at the same time as 112.052B, the legislature has said to the comptroller, you are prohibited from adopting a rule that would require taxpayers to make protest payments by EFT.
But didn't you, at the beginning of the argument here, say that the First Global wasn't sure when they made the payment whether it was a protest payment? Did I understand you correctly?
Sorry, maybe I didn't finish my answer. So when we were making this decision of what was going on, this was certainly something we were discussing as this being an option. But at the time, in May of 2017, we were still trying to get them to move forward on the administrative claims and getting nowhere. So ultimately, if my memory serves me correctly, we did know at the time that we were going to be making it under protest, and that our path to jurisdiction lied through 112.052B, which says you attach the protest letter to the report when it's later filed. You do not attach it to the report, and the extension payment. And there's a good reason for that. The legislature knows that our Texas franchise tax piggybacks off of the federal income tax system, and that a taxpayer has to first complete and file their federal income tax report, and that most taxpayers, the vast majority of taxpayers, are not going to be able to complete and file their federal income tax return and their Texas franchise tax return by the regular May 15th filing deadline. So they have said, with this exception in 112.052B, for taxpayers who need to protest their annual franchise tax reports and need to extend the deadline first, this one narrow circumstance, we are going to relax the requirement that we normally would, where we would normally require a payment to be attached to the protest letter when it's made following an assessment. And we're going to say, in this situation, we are going to have them attach the protest letter to the report when the numbers are final. Because at the time you're making the extension payment, yes, we knew that we were going to be protesting, but we did not know the exact number. And that's why we needed the extension, is to finalize all the numbers and calculate the number. And
so when you made the payment, you knew that it was a protest payment, and you just didn't know the details of it.
Correct. We did not know the number. And, you know, jurisdictionally, we have to state the amount under protest in the protest letter. And the legislature knows this, just like they know the realities of preparing and filing franchise tax reports and what's required before that. And, you know, as a practical matter, you know, what we're asking you to do is to allow us to extend the deadline to file our annual report and then protest it later, as opposed to making us very quickly prepare our federal income tax returns and our Texas franchise tax report and get that filed with the protest letter on May 15th. And what they are saying is, yes, you know, everyone may be able to do that, but only the teeny tiniest, smallest of taxpayers who pay less than $10,000 a year in tax, who would never even be incentivized really to incur the expense of a tax protest lawsuit, are eligible to both extend the deadline and then protest the report later.
I mean, to what extent do we have the ability to decide whether it's reasonable or not? I mean, aren't we instead looking specifically and explicitly at the statute and deciding whether there's a specific waiver of sovereign immunity?
Yes, Your Honor, because
it may sound really reasonable, but we've got to get there by the statutory provisions.
Absolutely, I agree with you. But you cannot read any of these statutes in isolation. They are referencing statutes. You have to read 112.052B in the greater context of 0.052, as well as with 112.051. And of course, you also have to read 171.202C and 3.9. And one thing that's important also to point out about Rule 3.9 is, you know, this is their rule that they drafted and adopted, and it says at the very beginning, this pertains to protest payments made under 112.051, traditional protest payments made in the context of a taxpayer protesting an assessment. It does not set out requirements for what we have going on here, where a taxpayer invokes what the exception in 112.052B to protest an original report and make an extension payment first and then protest the report at the time it's filed.
So are you arguing that 3.9 doesn't govern here?
The requirements within 3.9 that say you have to attach your protest letter to your payment do not govern here, because they would be in conflict directly with 112.052.
But what about the 3.9 provisions for the EFT, which I thought is what you all were relying on to say that you don't have to pay by EFT?
That's correct, but also remember the reason that that is in there is because government code 404.095 prohibits them from ever adopting such a rule. They cannot adopt a rule that requires us to make a protest payment by EFT. And under the Zimmer case that we've cited in our brief, they noticed and drafted this rule, and they can't now come back later and want to read it differently than the text that they wrote in the rule, where it very clearly says it's limited to 112.051 traditional payments that are made there. So again, we, First Global, believes that it complied with the plain language of the statute because the extension payment is a protest payment, and protest payments are not required by rule to be made by EFT, ever. And therefore, the extension was granted under 171.202C because it is, the language there is broad. It covers all tax payments made in connection with the filing of an annual report, which is exactly our facts here. And therefore, the exception in 112.052B applies.
What if you had a situation where someone went ahead and paid their taxes not realizing that they were going to protest, and then later realized they needed to protest?
You mean if they extended the deadline and did what we did here? I mean, right. That could happen. But also what could happen is that we could... you could have a situation where you have taxpayers under what they're arguing who attach protest letters to their extension payment and include a note on the form, even though it doesn't allow you to indicate what section you're under, saying, hey, we're protesting this. And so now, you know, we should be under 171.202C, and then they could later change their mind and say, no, I don't want to protest anymore. You know, the system that they're arguing for, I feel like, leaves the door open for all sorts of gaming. Whereas if you go with the system laid out by the legislature, what's baked in here is that they don't get notice at the time that a taxpayer makes the payment. That's just the reality of this situation under the system set out by the legislature. They've made a policy decision that in these limited circumstances, it's better to attach the protest letter to the report when the numbers are final. And, you know, of course, we're not arguing that no one is arguing that the statute is ambiguous or, you know, for certain why they did that. But again, we don't see any logical reason why they would have done it any differently, because it doesn't make sense when you don't know the final numbers yet, when you're having to first prepare your federal income tax return and our system piggybacks off of that, and when the reality is that the vast, vast majority of taxpayers are going to need an extension before they file their final report. Now, with those realities in mind, to me, it makes logical sense what they have done here.
What do you say to the argument that what y'all really need to do is to file a refund suit?
I think that's certainly an option. We could have done that. And, you know, we tried that for several years, and they've taken no action. So we've been sitting there since 2012 at the tax division with no action and begging them to take some action.
And you're not allowed to go to court until they...
That's correct. Under... Sorry.
Have an assessment.
So under a refund claim, there would be no assessment. We filed a refund claim afterwards saying we overcalculated and overpaid. Can you refund our money back? And then it sits there, and they have to rule on that refund claim. We have to go through a hearing at SOA, and then it comes back to the comptroller, who's got to issue a decision, and then we have to file a motion for rehearing, and then we can go into district court. And we've been waiting. And again, those claims will have to continue through that process. But after years and years, we decided in this instance to try to go another route that has clearly been laid out by the legislature for taxpayers to protest original suits.
Refund options still exist for you now with regard to these sums.
That's correct.
And as far as the protest suit, I mean, essentially what you all would be protesting in this matter is your own calculation of what you think the tax payment was going to be, because they haven't assessed anything, correct?
That's correct. They have not issued an assessment. And what we did was calculate the number based on the discovery responses we had received in the administrative claims, where they provided us a formula for how we should calculate the taxes under the way they read the statute. We applied that formula to our 2017 numbers. That's how we know the amount claimed by the state. We weren't able to prove that up here because, again, we were denied the discovery in the lower court on that fact issue, and they agreed on the record we would be entitled to that discovery to prove up that we calculated the number correctly. So, So in closing, again, we're asking the court to affirm the ruling of the trial court and remand us back to the district court to proceed to trial. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Leonard. Rebuttal, Ms. Andrews?
Yes, Your Honor. I'd like to point out, first of all, that the exception in 112.052b talks about it's for a taxpayer for whom an extension is granted under 171.202c. 171.202c is for non-electronic filers. They're saying that because their payment was made under protest, that had to be the section that it was granted under. But at the time the payment was made, it was not a protest payment. The extension was granted immediately after the extension request and payment were made. At that point, it was paid electronically, as First Global was required by rule today to do, with no indication whatsoever that it was a protest payment. There was no protest letter attached, as 3.9i requires. There was nothing telling the comptroller this is a protest payment. So the comptroller granted the extension request the only way the comptroller possibly could have, which was under 171.202c. The fact that First Global later submitted a protest letter didn't go back in time and change that to a protest payment when it was made and then make the extension having been granted under 171.202c.
So, let me ask you a question. So if they would have filed a protest letter, would the comptroller have been okay with that, or would they would have brought up the ripeness issue and said, well, we haven't assessed you yet. How can you protest this?
We would have brought up the ripeness issue. And just to go back quickly, I believe I just said that it was granted under 171.202c. It was granted under 171.202e. But I apologize. Back to your question. Yes, in our brief, we conceded that if 171.202c were, if the exception in 112.052b applied, then, if the extension were granted under 171.202c, then the 112.052b exception would apply here. But we never conceded the jurisdiction was proper. We can't concede that anyway. It's for the court
correct,
to determine.
But to go back to my question is, if they would have filed a protest with their payment, the comptroller's position would be that's not right because we haven't assessed.
Absolutely. And we have another suit with First Global that's currently postured like that at the district court, where we filed a plea to the jurisdiction solely on the fact that there has not yet been an amount claimed by the state. But here, because there were so many jurisdictional issues and so much, there was just a lot going on, so we chose to try to streamline it and focus on the strict statutory language.
All those clear statutes.
Yeah. These clear statutes.
We appreciate that.
Well, and under First Global's reading, Ms. Leonard just stated that the comptroller does not get notice under that reading that a payment is made under protest, and that just can't be. There are several cases that rule the comptroller's entitled to notice that someone disagrees with them before they sue them. That's the point of an administrative agency being delegated authority to make certain decisions, is so that these decisions don't have to be made at the court level.
So what happens, or what's the remedy for a taxpayer if they go for the refund and they feel that the state agency is not doing anything with the refund and they can't go to court?
There could be some kind of ultra virus claim or something along those lines, not to concede that something like that would be proper, but they would have different remedies. However, that's not the case here, and there is absolutely nothing in the record other than argument of counsel saying that the comptroller has caused all of the delays. In fact, we've offered to move this forward, and they've chosen to stay it.
And those delays are on prior year's amounts anyway, right? They're not on the amount at issue in this case.
That's right. That ultimately will give the decision as to how the comptroller is going to choose to treat the apportionment question, because it is the exact same apportionment question, but it is numbers for different years. But if they did the refund claim, this would likely be combined with the earlier proceeding, and it can move forward and get a ruling once and for all, and then they could go to court on that ruling if they still disagree with it. But they might win.
But are they, did you say there's a stay in those? And I understand that's not before us today.
That's correct, Your Honor. We have offered hearings in the other matter, and they've declined. So none of this is in the record, and it doesn't matter for jurisdiction. But if there's a complaint about delays by the comptroller, they have other remedies, and it's not to file a protest suit for which the court lacks jurisdiction. Unless there are any other questions, thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Andrews, Ms. Leonard, for a good argument on a complex statutory case. The case will be submitted. Court will take a brief recess, and the attorneys in the next case, Hager versus Alcorta, can take their seats at the table, and our crowd can switch in or out as needed.
It's
just a minute.
It's not complex.